When I had soaped and disinfected my arms, I made my first exploration, and it wasn't difficult to find the cause of the trouble. There was a head and two legs, all right, but they belonged to different calves.
"We've got twins here," I said. "These are hind legs you've been pulling. A posterior presentation."
"Ass first, you mean?"
"If you like.
And the calf that's coming the right way has both his legs back along his sides. Now I'll have to push him back out of the way and get the other one first." This was going to be a pretty tight squeeze. Normally I like a twin calving because the calves are usually so small, but these seem to be quite big. I put my hand against the little muzzle in the passage, poked a finger into the mouth, and was rewarded by a jerk and flip of the tongue. He was alive, anyway. I began to push him steadily back into the uterus, wondering at the same time what the little creature was making of it. He had almost entered the world. His nostrils had been a couple of inches from the outside air, and now he was being returned to the starting post. The cow didn't think much of the idea either, because she started a series of straining heaves with the object of frustrating me. She did a pretty fair job, too, since a cow is a lot stronger than a man. But I kept my arm rigid against the calf, and though each heave forced me back, I maintained a steady pressure till I pushed him to the brim of the pelvis. I turned to Mr. Dumbleby and gasped, "I've got his head out of the way. Get hold of those feet and pull the other calf out." The butcher stepped forward ponderously, and each of his big, meaty hands engulfed a foot. Then he closed his eyes, and with many facial contortions and noises of painful effort, he began to go through the motions of tugging. The calf didn't move an inch, and my spirits drooped. Mr. Dumbleby was a grunter. This expression had its origin in an occasion when Siegfried and a farmer had a foot apiece at a carving, and the farmer was making pitiful sounds without exerting himself in the slightest. Siegfried had turned to him and said,
"Look, let's come to an arrangement. You do the pulling, and I'll do the grunting."
It was clear I was going to get no help from the big butcher, and decided to have one go by myself. I might be lucky. I let go the muzzle and made a quick grab for those hind feet, but the cow was too quick for me. I had just got a slippery grasp when she made a single, expulsive effort and pushed calf number two into the passage again. I was back where I started. Once more I put my hand against the wet little muzzle and began the painful process of repulsion. And as I fought against the big cow's straining, I was reminded that it was 4 a.m. when none of us feels very strong. By the time I had worked the head back to the pelvic inlet, I was feeling the beginning of that deadly creeping weakness, and it seemed as though somebody had removed most of the bones from my arm. This time I took a few seconds to get my breath back before I made my dive for the feet, but it was no good. The cow beat me easily with a beautifully timed contraction. Again, that intruding head was jammed tight in the passage. I had had enough. And it occurred to me that the little creature inside must also be getting a little tired of his back-and-forth business. I shivered my way through the cold, empty shop out into the silent street, and collected the local anaesthetic from the car. 8 cc's into the epidural space, and the cow, its uterus completely numbed, lost all interest in the proceedings. In fact, she pulled a little hay from her rack and began to chew absently. From then on, it was like working inside a mailbag. Whatever I pushed stayed put instead of surging back at me. The only snag was that once I got everything straight, there were no uterine contractions to help me. It was a case of pulling. Leaning back on a hind leg, and with Mr. Dumbleby panting in agony on the other, the posterior presentation was soon delivered. He had inhaled a fair amount of placental fluid, but I held him upside down till he had coughed it up. When I laid him on the bare floor, he shook his head vigorously and tried to sit up. Then I had to go in after my old friend, the second calf. He was lying well inside now, apparently sulking. When I finally brought him, snuffling and kicking into the light, I couldn't have blamed him if he had said, "Make up your mind, will you?" Toweling my chest, I looked with the sharp stab of pleasure I always felt at the two wet little animals, wriggling on the floor, as Mr. Dumbleby rubbed them down with a handful of straw.
"Big uns for twins," the butcher muttered.
Even this modest expression of approval surprised me,
and it seemed I might as well push things along a bit.
Yes. They're two grand calves. Twins are often dead when they're mixed up like that. Good job we got them out alive.
I paused a moment.
You know, those two must be worth a fair bit.
Mr. Dumblebee didn't answer, and I couldn't tell whether the shaft had gone home. I got dressed, gathered up my gear, and followed him out of the byre, and into the silent shop past the rows of beef cuts hanging from hooks, the trays of offal, the mounds of freshly made sausages. Near the outside door, the butcher halted and stood irresolute for a moment. He seemed to be thinking hard. Then he turned to me.
"Would you like a few sausages?"
I almost reeled in my astonishment.
"Yes. Thank you very much, I would."
It was scarcely credible, but I must have touched the man's heart. He went over, cut about a pound of links, wrapped them quickly in greaseproof paper, and handed the parcel to me. I looked down at the sausages, feeling the cold weight on my hand. I still couldn't believe it. Then an unworthy thought welled in my mind. It wasn't fair, I know. The poor fellow couldn't have known the luxury of many generous impulses. But some inner demon drove me to put him to the test. I put a hand in my trouser pocket, jingled my loose chains, and looked him in the eye.
"Well, how much will that be?" I asked.
Mr. Dumblebee's big frame froze suddenly into immobility, and he stood for a few seconds perfectly motionless. His face, as he stared at me, was almost without expression. But a single twitch of the cheek, and a slowly rising anguish in the eyes, betrayed the internal battle which was raging. When he did speak, it was in a husky whisper, as though the words had been forced from him by a power beyond his control.
"That," he said, "will be 2 and 6 pence."